I mean, uncertainty scares everybody, especially in a situation like this after, you know, 20 years of war.
Inside Taliban Talks. It's Friday, October 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, receding reefs weaken the Great Barrier. Mammoth U.S. political battles. Health monitoring close. It's all on today's VOA Asia. NATO's senior civilian representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo, says while both the Taliban and the Afghanistan Republic negotiation teams in Doha have entered the talks in good faith, the rigidity of the Taliban team is holding up progress. He sat down with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul to discuss what he said were unacceptably high levels of violence, the future of NATO's commitment to Afghanistan, and what the country might look like in 10 years. Here's part two of our interview.
If the U.S. forces withdraw before their 14-month timeline that they agreed to in February, how would NATO respond?
Well, I would refer back to the Secretary General's comments on this issue. The Secretary General reminded all of us that there are alliance decisions for which we have come in together. We will adjust together, and we are adjusting together in support of the peace process, and we will go out together. And on the operational front, nothing much is happening.
This time, I have seen many Afghans more scared than I've seen them in the past many years, and they think that the history of the 90s will be repeated. Do you think their fears are valid?
No, I don't, because first, in the 90s, there wasn't an ANDSF. Now there is. There is a strong, professional, motivated, and capable fighting force which is able to stand its ground. Second, the Afghan society is not the same. So I believe that the Afghan society will not take an attempt to a return to the past lying down. So I believe that uncertainty scares everybody, especially in a situation like this after, you know, 20 years of war. But I'm fairly confident that it will not be repeated.
You're right that there's an NDSF. You're also right that the Afghan society has changed, but the Afghan economy is not doing very well. They collected half the taxes that they were supposed to collect. They require something of, I don't know, $10 billion in foreign assistance just to make their budget. How long in this COVID-driven world economy, when every country is struggling with money, how long will they be able to pump those billions into Afghanistan?
Well, we hope, first of all, it is true that the Afghan economy is not doing as well as it could, even taking account of the situation, which is what it is. I mean, it's 20 years war, which doesn't help any economy. The government knows it has to do more. The president has said that. And I would take the occasion to say that, as you said, Afghanistan needs external help for hopefully a decreasing number of years.
So sitting where you're sitting, knowing all that you know, all the information that you have, what does Afghanistan look like in 10 years?
Inshallah, it's a stable, peaceful, prosperous, and advanced Islamic country, integrating all the ethnicities, integrating the current Taliban fighters, having gotten rid of the other extremist forces, at peace with itself and with the region, to which we can be a great contributor. Afghanistan is a link with everything around here. So it is in the interest of countries in the region to have a stable Afghanistan. And I hope that, we have to give Afghans the possibility to show what they're made of. And I remember this country. I was here as a child. It was a pearl. And that is what I hope it will become.
NATO's senior civilian representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo. Hear and see the entire interview at our website. That's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China angered as U.S. names human rights envoy for Tibet. U.S. destroyer sails through Taiwan Strait, provoking China. Ardern tipped to win second term in New Zealand election. Kyrgyzstan president resigns after unrest. Australia police drop journalist probe over Afghan troop story. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A flotilla of tourist boats, fishing vessels, and yachts is conducting a pioneering survey of Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Conservationists have recruited more than 30 boats to help examine up to 150 ecologically significant reefs over the next 10 weeks. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Great Barrier Reef is so vast that as much as 40% of this underwater paradise has never been surveyed. A fleet of private boats has begun inspecting critical parts of Australia's greatest natural treasure to help establish the impact of climate change, pollution, and other threats. The project, coordinated by citizens of the Great Barrier Reef, aims to capture large-scale reconnaissance data. Andy Ridley is the organisation's chief executive.
The Great Reef Census involves a whole load of organisations who work on the reef, from tourism operators to super yacht owners to research stations, universities. There's four universities involved, including University of Queensland and James Cook University. And we've had some amazing support from funders such as the Great Barrier Reef Foundation. But it's a really massive collective community effort.
Snorkelers and recreational divers will take photographs at specified sites on the reef every 10 metres. The images will be available online for analysis by so-called citizen scientists around the world. Peter Mumby, a professor at the University of Queensland School of Biological Sciences, says the data will be invaluable.
What we're hoping to achieve with the help of the public is to find those reefs that are most important at driving the recovery of the barrier reef to the series of bleaching events that it has experienced in recent years.
Large areas of the Great Barrier Reef have been degraded in recent years by severe bleaching, or loss of the algae that corals host, that give them their vibrant colour and much of their energy. It's caused by warmer ocean temperatures, and scientists say it's made worse by climate change. The reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres off northeastern Australia. It's about the size of Japan and is the world's largest coral system. The World Heritage listed area is home to an array of marine creatures, including 600 types of coral and more than 100 species of jellyfish. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's prime minister has declared a state of emergency in response to massive protests demanding his resignation and reforms of the country's constitutional monarchy. Authorities warned protesters not to go ahead with a planned demonstration in the Thai capital Thursday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Friday. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. This week, the U.S. Senate is holding confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett to fill the Supreme Court seat left empty by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away last month. Supreme Court justices receive lifetime positions that hold great power, and the battle to fill the seat has become a focus of the contest between President Donald Trump and his challenger Joe Biden. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara reports.
Protesters and supporters of Amy Coney Barrett square off outside of the Supreme Court as the conservative judge faces tough questions from Senate Democrats, including whether she will recuse herself from cases that could impact the outcome of the November election.
I will apply the factors that other justices have before me in determining whether the circumstances require my recusal or not. But I can't offer a legal conclusion right now about the outcome of the decision I would reach.
Appointment of conservative judges is a key campaign promise for President Donald Trump, who often frames it in ideological terms.
If Joe Biden and the Democrats take power, they will pack the Supreme Court with far-left radicals. who will unilaterally transform American society far beyond recognition.
Currently behind in opinion polls, Trump frequently claims the only way he will lose against Democratic nominee Joe Biden is if the election is rigged. With dozens of election-related lawsuits already filed, close results in swing states could mean a scenario like the 2000 race between George W. Bush and Al Gore, where the result was decided by a Supreme Court vote. Statements by Trump and some Republicans suggesting that Barrett must be confirmed to ensure the court rules in their favor in post-election litigation creates the appearance of impropriety, said constitutional expert Adam White.
They have really created a cloud that I think she is going to have to dispel through her own work on the court to make very clear that when she's appointed to the court, that she doesn't answer to President Trump, she doesn't answer to anybody but the law.
If Barrett is confirmed, there will be six justices appointed by Republican presidents and three appointed by Democrats. If Biden wins, some Democrats want him to appoint more Supreme Court justices, arguing that it would help ideologically balance the court. Republicans strongly oppose that. The number of justices is not set in the Constitution, but there have been nine since 1869.
If you add more and more seats, you're going to have small coalitions that have to engage in sort of compromise and I won't say bartering, but it'll look less and less like a principled body of decisions and more like a set of legislative compromises.
Biden says he's not a fan of court packing, but has largely avoided the issue, focusing instead on Democrats' concern that the court could overturn a signature Obama-era legislation that expands Americans' access to health care.
This nominee said she wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. The president wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Barrett insisted that if confirmed, she has no agenda on Obamacare or other politically divisive issues, including abortion rights and same-sex marriage. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Researchers in the field of textile computing are developing clothing that can monitor health vitals, such as heart rate and respiration. As social distancing efforts continue and the use of telemedicine grows, the implications for remote healthcare are significant. Tina Trin explores.
These days, checking in with a doctor may mean going online, but in the future, it could simply mean getting dressed. Textile computing researchers are developing washable sensors that can measure your vital signs through your clothes.
Our yarn is actually the sensor, and then we knit or weave that sensor in a specific formation.
Tony Shaheen is the CEO of Canadian startup Myint, which is currently testing a line of connected undergarments.
We're taking an electric signal from the body through a conductive thread or a conductive yarn.
He likens it to getting an electrocardiogram at the hospital.
The wire is getting the electric signal off the heart. Essentially, we're doing the same thing, except on yarn.
Over at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, a prototype shirt has flexible, washable sensors discreetly woven into channels of the fabric.
And we digitally knit it based on your body so that it can have a conformable structure along with our conformable electronics.
Customized garments could potentially be fitted to any body type, even newborns. Both MIT and Myint garments gather physiological data such as heart rate, temperature, respiration, and movement.
This device sort of create a map of your body throughout the week or throughout the month or throughout the seasons.
It's a more comprehensive picture of patient health that can inform both doctors and family members via detachable Bluetooth modules that wirelessly transmit the data. Dr. Milos Popovic is testing Myint's undergarments and says the technology is especially beneficial for the aging population.
We see this as a solution to bring care to the patients in their homes and enable people to be treated from homes without them needing to come to the hospital. And that reduces the burden on the hospital so we can treat more patients.
A glimpse of the future of healthcare in the age of social distancing. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
That's our program for today and for the week. We thank you so much for joining us on VOA Asia. Don't forget, you may continue online with us on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd also like to thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.